We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Today's information technologies make it possible for us to be in touch with family and friends literally at the touch of a button. At the same time, there are some social scientists who tell us that there seems to have been some erosion in our ability to connect with and understand the feelings of others. And that's a little ironic, as it is we're in a world now where it seems that we are so connected, or that it's easy to be connected. The guest for this hour is Sarah Conrath. She's a social psychologist at the University of Michigan. And she is interested in studying two things that are sort of the two sides of the coin, so to speak. Empathy on the one hand and narcissism on the other. And one of the things that we'll be talking about here this morning is a much publicized study that was carried out by Michigan's Institute for Social Research that found there had been a significant decline in empathy among American college students. We'll talk about that, some of the other research that she has done, and we'd be very happy to take questions. She's visiting the campus, by the way, to give a talk. She's here. She is being sponsored by the Institute of Communications Research, and she'll be giving a talk at noon today on the campus at the Levis Faculty Center. So if you'd like to hear her, you can do that. And if you'd like to call in, you can do that. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send a question by email, you can certainly do that. Will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
I think that maybe we should start out with some definitions, as even I think among psychologists, when you use the term empathy, everyone may have a little bit different definition. But let's just start there. So when you use that word empathy, what do you mean?
Well, I take sort of a multidimensional approach, which means that I think empathy is complex. It includes both emotional responsiveness to others, so actually feeling other people's feelings when something happens to them, but also more intellectual or cognitive aspects, so the ability to almost step inside another person's mind and see the world from their perspective. Those two are related, but they are different.
So it's sort of the difference between on a kind of intellectual level, being able to say, looking at somebody else and what they're going through, is being able to say, I understand. I can understand what that person's going through. And there, that's one thing.
Yes.
But the fact that you actually have an emotional response to, say, another person is distressed. It's like the difference between saying, well, I understand what that person is going through, and then saying, I actually feel what that person is going through. They're in distress, so it makes me feel distressed. Those are actually two different things.
Yes, and it's important to distinguish, even within the emotional response, there's some disagreement among psychologists. So there can be the emotional response to that person's distress, or there can be something called personal distress, which is when, for example, we see somebody who's hurt and rather than imagine or feeling from their perspective, we just get overwhelmed ourselves and can't deal with it. And that's a more egocentric type. It's not, it's classified as empathy sort of broadly, but it's really not the same thing.
So it's a little complicated.
It's pretty complicated.
Generally speaking, I guess people do understand the idea that when you talk about empathy, it has something to do with being able to respond to what's going on emotionally with another person.
Yes, I think that's we should have just started with that.
So then just and then on the other side, there's this other thing that I know that you're also interested in, which has to do with people and what they think about themselves and how involved they are with themselves.
Narcissism. So I study narcissism as a personality trait. So there is a psychological disorder called narcissistic personality disorder, which can be diagnosed. It's the prevalence is about 1% of the population. But of course, it might be low because people who are narcissists don't necessarily go get help. That's part of the definition. But I study sort of everyday narcissists. So narcissists that exist in our everyday world, and we probably all know a few. And it is, I think we all have an, it's another kind of definitional thing. We all have an idea of what a narcissist is. The definition I tend to use is kind of having a sense of inflated self-esteem. So not just healthy self-esteem, but self-esteem that's higher than it should be given the evidence.
Yes.
So I've also been doing parallel work on narcissism along with this work on empathy.
Yeah. So it's, I suppose that there are some people would say that these two things may be inversely proportional. I mean, in the sense, if somebody is highly narcissistic, you might think that they were also low in empathy. But that's not, apparently that's not necessarily true.
Well, there is a correlation. There's a negative correlation. Okay. So yes. So it's not a huge one, but generally, on average, people who are higher in narcissism are lower in empathy, and people who are higher in empathy are lower in narcissism.
Right. I'm just thinking, is it actually possible you could have somebody who was very narcissistic and also very and also was high in empathy? Is that just not very likely?
It's not likely, but it is possible, theoretically. Okay. And that would be very interesting.
All right. So I want to talk about the study that you were involved in, and I guess this was publicized, I believe it was in 2010, so...
The paper just came out a couple days ago, actually.
Oh, okay.
In Personality and Social Psychology Review.
And the thing that I guess it struck me in looking for some material on this was how widely reported on this study was.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that it got that much attention?
We were very surprised. We did write a press release just because it was something interesting, but the press office at ISR laughed and said, well, it's going to be the Memorial Day weekend at the conference, so we're not going to get any attention. So I was like, all right, good. So it was shocking. And it's been going on still, even after this. It's been almost a year.
Okay. So talk about basically what you did.
So what we did, we used a method. It's called cross-temporal meta-analysis. So we ourselves, I know. It's a big, crazy
Yeah, I just
word.
Made a funny look, and she picked up on that.
Yes,
She's
sorry.
She's very empathic in that sense.
So, yes, for those of you who are listening, he made a funny face. So it's... Forget the word and just imagine what I did, which is we looked at any article that had ever cited this very valid empathy scale called the Interpersonal Reactivity Index. And this index was created in the early 80s, but we had data available from 1979 on. And we just simply, we ourselves did not collect data. We just collected data from people who've already collected data.
Yeah, so it's a study of studies.
A study that's of what which is that's what meta-analysis means.
Okay.
So
you went back and essentially, as much as you could, looked at all the studies that you possibly could find that were looking at this question to see then what they found, and then took all those results and
bunched them all together. And we specifically, in order to use this method, we have to have a comparable population over time. So we specifically restricted it to American college students.
Okay.
And that is the most frequent group, but we wouldn't want to compare. We wouldn't want to say empathy is declining because we see that the more recent groups were like clinical populations. That would be an unfair comparison. So it's all the same age. It's about 20 years old on average, and it's all American college students. And all the studies I've been doing with this method use the same group.
Yeah, I suppose for good or ill, so many psychological studies are done at universities, and they have this ready population of potential subjects to study their students. So I imagine that college students end up being the studied population in an awful lot of psychology studies.
Yes, and unfortunately, I think we make conclusions about the world based on them. But we have learned our lesson, and we're moving outside of that a little more lately.
Okay. Well, so on this study now, over what period of time, how many years worth of studies did you manage to?
It was 30 years, 1979 to 2009.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the data on empathy, American college students, over a 30-year period.
Yeah.
And you found?
And I found that, or we found, I should say, my co-authors and I found that empathy has been declining. The emotional kind of empathy had the largest decline. It was a 48% drop. And the cognitive empathy had about 34% drop.
Okay. So, and this was, and you know, maybe not surprising that this was so picked up on. And I know I read a piece that you wrote where you were reacting to the reaction.
Yeah.
And saying, well, yes, this is something to be concerned about. Obviously, this is something significant. But whether this is the end of the world or not, well, you know, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't think it's the end of empathy. I mean, empathy has been declining in these studies, but it's measured on a 1 to 5 scale. It's still above 3. So I think that if it were to get to 3 or below, then it would actually be like low empathy. Mm-hmm. It's still, people still are saying that they have some empathy. It's just not as high as it used to be.
And now this was based, I think, largely on a kind of a survey that individuals take. So essentially what you're asking people to do is to rate themselves, not so much you're just asking them, do you think you're an empathetic person or not? I mean, you're trying to find ways to get a good reading. But essentially, you're relying on people to reflect on themselves and give some kind of score to themselves.
Yes, it's self-report. So they answer questions like, I often have tender, concerned feelings for other people, or I sometimes take the point of view of others. So these are kind of like obviously measuring empathy. So there's always that problem of whether people just want to say they're mm-hmm. empathetic. But these scales do predict people's behavior. So people who say that they are more empathetic on these scales also act in ways that you would think.
So you think that that's actually been found to be fairly reliable way of gauging an individual's empathy?
Reliable for self-report, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that does have its drawbacks, but yeah.
And I think I do remember, now, forgive me, I don't know if this is on your personal webpage, but there was something that I looked at that where you could actually take, anybody who could go and take this, if they were curious about the survey, what the questions were, how they would score, people can do it themselves.
Yeah, we put up the score of the average of all the, there was almost 14,000 college students, so we posted that score and people can take their own score and see how they compare, which... It's interesting. We had an amazing response to that, too. There's been, I think, over 125,000 people responding.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I can see where having read about this, that an individual would be curious about how they would score and how they would fit in. So in a way, that doesn't surprise me that many people. That is an awful lot of people.
Yeah, it crashed my computer when I tried to analyze it. So it's a lot.
Uh-huh. So then you could take that and take those scores and get a more, what you would think might be a slightly more representative cross-section of the country and say, as a way to check, are your college students representative of America as a whole?
Yeah, that is one thing we're doing with it, but it's not too representative because it is self-selected. It's people who heard about the study and want to
decide to do it.
But we actually do have a representative sample that is... run by the General Social Survey that has the exact same scale, coincidentally. And we do find parallel patterns. So it's the people born in the 1980s who have the lowest empathy, or 80s and later, and same with this crazy large data set. But also, interestingly, people who are born in the 30s also have relatively low, at 20s and 30s. So the what it looks like is this upside-down U. Mm-hmm. And it's the people in like the 50s and 60s who have the highest empathy, and otherwise the tail ends are lower. So that's something we're trying to figure out right now.
Very interesting. Let me just, again, for anybody who might have tuned in, introduce again our guest, Sarah Conrath. She is a social psychologist. She's on the psychology faculty of the University of Michigan. And she's interested in, among other things, she's interested in empathy and has done a lot of research on this. And she and some of her colleagues there at the Institute for Social Research did this big study where they took a look at surveys of empathy among college students for a whole bunch of surveys over a long period of time. It was from 1979 up until the year 2000. So looking at a number of studies, and found that there was, over that period of time, particularly at 2000, there was a big drop-off in empathy. And as she said, it actually tracks pretty well with other surveys that don't just look at college students, but they look at a much larger population. She's here visiting the campus. We'll give a talk later. Tell you more about that later. But certainly questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455. The toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. We have somebody here. They're on a cell phone. I will not make them wait. We'll go right there. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hot topics and subjects in the business world now, especially in human resource development, is emotional intelligence among people, especially among people in leadership positions. And I'm wondering what the difference is, if any, between, how the study of empathy and emotional intelligence fit together. The one thing that I've noticed that's different is in emotional intelligence, they talk about how the first thing you have to do is be aware of your own feelings and have a truthful and correct understanding of your own feelings and emotions, which I haven't noticed you talking about so far. And then another question would be, I'm wondering if there's any correlation at all between empathy and the work of Dr. Ekman as far as being able to pick up people's microexpressions and facial cues and to be able to read people that way, if there's any correlation between that ability and an empathy score.
Okay, so to answer your first question about emotional intelligence, you're correct that there are different aspects to emotional intelligence. So empathy is one of them, but there are many others, including the ability to a good understanding of one's own emotions. So in most measurements of emotional intelligence, there is empathy is one of the measurements. So I'm not sure overall what's happening with emotional intelligence over time, but we can just speak to empathy, which has been declining. Now, as for microexpressions, it's actually kind of a neat idea to look at whether people who are more empathetic could actually identify microexpressions. They are better at identifying facial emotional expressions in general, but just kind of using still photos. So it'd be really interesting to test sort of the harder task, which is to look for the little tiny twitches in the face and see if people can actually identify them if they're more empathetic.
All right, thanks. It's interesting that gets at the work of a psychologist, Paul Ekman, who's very famous for studying facial expressions.
Right.
And among the things that he did was he had this question, well, are facial expressions, do they work across culture? And he found out that, in fact, that they did. A happy face is a happy face and a sad face is a sad face pretty much wherever you go. But he's also done this very interesting work that says that people, there are very tiny things that go on in the muscles of the face that give you away. And his one of his things is that he can tell whether someone's lying or not by looking for very small facial cues. And apparently it's a thing that he says you can train people to do, to be able to recognize these things, but that they're things that most of the time would go right by. We would never see them.
Right. And just a little plug, there's a show that he consults on called Lie to Me.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, well, I haven't, but I've actually talked to him, and
was
one of the things we talked a little bit about, that he consults on it, and it's sort of loosely based on him and his work.
Yes, but what's neat about it is if you want to learn about microexpressions, it does give you kind of a little bit of an overview of what they are, and it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, we'll go to, we had another caller. Other callers are welcome, 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I wanted to come back to one of the points that I just want to mention in passing is that as you took a look at what was happening with empathy over time, over this particular time period, I want to get back to this 2000 breakpoint, where you found that it seemed that right around, that it had kind of been declining, but that there was a steeper drop off right about at that point, at about the year 2000.
Yes, in fact, if you look at the graphs, it looks like it's declining throughout the whole time period. But actually, the statistics say that the first half there wasn't a statistical change. It was after 2000 that empathy really started to decline.
And there, so I guess there, and then there, the idea is that, what you're talking about is people who would have been born like right around 1980.
Yes.
So this invites the question, okay, so what in the, if this is the case, what kind of things in the world changed around that point so that people who had grown up in the 80s and then were in college at around 2000, what made them different from their issues. So what made them different from their parents?
Mm-hmm. Well, our data can't really speak to the causes, the whys, but we do have some speculations. And I think one obvious change has been a major change in media and media use. So in the 80s, there was an increase in home entertainment, video gaming, a lot more TV viewing and cable. And then moving toward now, it's been an incredible change. It's hard to know whether the college students were affected in their early childhood, and then we just saw it, you know, when they're 20, because that's the data we have, or whether they've been affected now by the new technology. So one thought is simply that media maybe is affecting them in some way.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising that it should be the media scholars here or the people who are interested in talking to you, because it has this, there is this interesting question about media and, first of all, whether just spending a lot of time in front of a screen is an issue. Then there's another question about what it is you're watching on that screen,
right,
and how that might play into it. So you've sounds like you feel sympathetic at least, or say, well, you know, that's an interesting hypothesis, and that's the thing you want to.
It's an interesting
follow
hypothesis,
along.
And I think that's one area for research. It's a very complicated. It's hard to study. How do you prove that media causes such a change? So there have been some correlational studies showing, for example, the use of like Facebook and things like that is related to more narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only been a couple of experimental studies that I could find in which people actually randomly assigned participants to go on their Facebook pages to see what would happen. And it did increase their narcissism. But it doesn't mean that this is necessarily the cause of all the changes, because media exists within a context, a cultural context, and there are many other changes at the same time that might explain why empathy has been declining.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with someone else, someone here on our toll-free line, line 4. We'll go there. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm sorry, I was driving, so you guys are kind of coming in and out with the reception, but my question is kind of a two-part question. First of all, did you look at economic factors? Obviously these are college students, but perhaps, you know, how they're raised and what kind of a economic household. And then the second question is, you know, you guys are coming in and out, but so we know that empathy has declined, you know, throughout all the study, all the people and all that, but do you know the reasons why? Have you looked at different things? There's so many different reasons why that could happen, and have you pinpointed specific reasons?
That's an excellent question. In fact, that's what we were just talking a little bit about, the whys, and there are a lot of big open questions. Let's come back to that, because that's rather more complicated. Maybe you could speak to the first question about do you think that somehow this correlates with economics? I assume that the caller is meaning that, you know, the socioeconomic status of the individual, does that affect their empathy?
Well, that's something we don't know much about. There is some recent work showing that people who are from lower socioeconomic backgrounds seem to be better able to identify emotions. So, but it's really understudied. in terms of larger economic changes, I thought my intuitive sense immediately after finding these results was that maybe it was something about increasing affluence or something like that. But it was. When we looked at unemployment numbers for the years and we compared them, and we were finding that that doesn't explain our finding. So it could be some sort of change in economics, but for now we haven't found that it is, although I think it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Just we can maybe talk some more about media. That's been a major interest here. But I think also you've been thinking about just general. What's the tenor of society, and that one might say, well, does this have something to do with people's drive to compete with others, people's drive to succeed? You know, your how much you're concerned with yourself and getting ahead and not really caring whether anybody else does.
Right, and that's how I think the economics would work, actually, in terms of changing empathy, because it would be not necessarily about people being more rich or more poor, but about people valuing economic success more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe as a result of increasing competition. For example, it used to be that you could go to college and then actually get a job. Things have changed a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's exactly in that same time period, but I think that's a good place to also look for causes.
Yeah. Let me just check. I don't know if the caller's still there. Are we kind of getting at your questions?
Yes, thank you very much. And I apologize if you already answered some of this. My reception isn't that great.
All right.
I guess that's it. Could it. Now, I'm sorry, what was the name of the, did you say Sarah? I want to look this up, and I don't get the name of the person.
Is it, well, yes, if somebody would like to read the study?
Yes.
It's now available. You could email me and I'll send you a copy, but it just came out. It's if you can't access it through your library, just look me up, Sarah Conrath, Conrath.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You may also send a question by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Is there, I'm sure that there are people who have looked at these other questions about whether people are, you know, is there something going on where people are thinking more about getting ahead, thinking about their success, the drive to compete, and whether in fact there's some way to measure that, and are people now more competitive? Do they feel like they have to work harder to get ahead, and if that's at the expense of somebody else, well, so be it.
Well, there are surveys that track attitudes over time, other surveys, and in those surveys, there's a finding that college students today are more likely than ever to think that being financially well off is their most important goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's actually sort of related to narcissism. Narcissism is associated with materialism, kind of wanting to show off, using products to show your superiority. So I think I would say that's part of the trend. What is causing that, I think, is the question.
Yeah. Just to go back, we sort of touched on this. We've mostly been talking about empathy, but at the beginning of the program, I asked you about narcissism, which is also something that you're interested in. Is there, forgive me, I may have already asked you this question. Has there been some sort of parallel increase in narcissism that would be the other side of the decrease in empathy?
Yes. So for my dissertation work, actually, we did this. We used this method to study narcissism and found that narcissism has been rising in college students across around the same time period. And my response was, I knew the methods were fine because I had done the work, but I was, you know, as a scientist, if you have one finding, especially if it's this kind of finding that's going to get a lot of attention, you want to make sure that, you know, it can replicate. So the original reason I actually did the empathy study was because I wanted to sort of disprove the first study. I thought it was very unlikely that I would actually find declines just by chance. So, but if we did find declines in empathy, I thought it was better. It was more evidence that the rise in narcissism was probably happening. It's kind of a sciencey way of thinking, but, you know, I'm a little more convinced
now. I guess that, you know, that would make perfect sense. If you're wondering, is one thing happening, then you'd say, well, and one way to gauge that is by saying, well, is the opposite thing, you know, those two things naturally offset? So you'd say, okay, let's look at the other one and see if you get the result that you think you should.
And you should, and I just think it's important in science never to just, like, focus on one study, because one study is going to say one thing. Maybe another study says the opposite. I mean, should you eat blueberries, right? There's always one study saying one or the other, or drink a glass of red wine. So it's good to look at sort of a bigger picture and have more than one study. And that's why I don't think, I mean, my studies are part of this, but it's part of, I think, a larger conversation.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour, this is Focus, by the way. I'm David Inge, and my guest is Sarah Conrath. She's a social psychologist. She's on the faculty at the University of Michigan and is interested, has done a lot of study of these two things that we're talking about here, empathy and narcissism. And, in fact, she was involved with some other folks there at the Institute for Social Research at Michigan in this big study, taking a look at empathy in college students and finding that there indeed was a decline, a 47% decline in empathy among college students between 1979 and 2000, and it seemed to be particularly big at the other end. Am I get that right?
It's between 79 and 2009, and it's after 2000 that the drop.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, between 1979 and 2009, and indeed, the place where there was the big drop was at 2000.
Yeah.
So between there and 2009. And she's visiting the campus, her visit sponsored here by the folks at the Institute of Communications Research. She will be giving a talk about this very thing at noon today at the Levis Faculty Center on the campus. So if you want to stop by, you can do that. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And I have a number of callers here. We'll get right back to the lines. And people can help us by trying to be brief, too. That way we can get in as many as we can. We'll start in at Charleston, line one. Hello.
Hi, thank you very much.
Yes.
I have two questions. I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
My first question may be outside the purview of our guest, but I was curious to know if there is any relationship between the physical perspective taking and the kind of emotional perspective taking, like maybe they use the same parts of the brain under an MRI. How are those related, physical perspective taking and this emotional perspective taking?
And you,
in terms of like where are they neurological signals?
Yeah, in terms of the activity in the brain. Are they related to those two abilities? And then my second question is, how much is empathy related to respect? And I'm not so sure I can make an argument for respect fostering empathy, but I can definitely see disrespect preventing empathy. And I wondered if you could talk about that.
Okay, well, the first question, I haven't done any studies on the brain, but I'm sure this is a topic that many brain researchers are interested in, and where empathy is located and how it works at the neural level. My guess is that perspective taking and emotional empathy would be related, but probably have some different areas. So I would think that perspective taking, because it's more cognitive, would be in the frontal lobes, whereas the emotional aspects might be more in the amygdala, which is where other emotional areas of the brain are. But it's a good question, and I wish I could answer it, but I can't. And the second question about what's the relationship between empathy and respect, I mean, it's very interesting. I think, and this is just speaking from my own guessing here, I'm not sure of any research on it, but my feeling is that people who are more empathetic are also try their best to, respect other people's points of view and kind of have they definitely do have a more polite and courteous interaction style, which I think is related to respect. And I'm not sure if I'm answering.
Well, I guess the third question, then, to jumble up the lines more, would be, is there a way to teach empathy, either through teaching respect or directly teaching empathy?
I'm curious how you
would impart this.
So that's where you're coming from. Is it teachable? So psychologists have thought of empathy as sort of an ability that you're born with, and some people have it more of it than others. But I've been thinking about it as more like a skill. That's something that can be taught and learned. So I've recently done a meta-analysis in which another meta-analysis study of studies in which we looked at a bunch of different studies that have tried to train empathy in students to see if there is actually an overall effect. And in fact, those studies show on average that there is a little bit of a training advantage. So you can teach empathy. The methods are very different, and I think there's many different ways to do it. But ultimately, there's some aspect of decreasing the focus on the self and then increasing another focus. So that's kind of an area that I think is really important for us to understand more about in the future.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thanks for your questions.
And let's see. Next, we will talk with someone in Urbana. And this is line two. Hello.
Hi. How much would you equate as an opposite the selfishness with empathy? And then how much is there cultural differences in how we find empathy? And how about the rise in conservatism around the world with the lack of empathy that you're finding now in people?
Okay, well, selfishness and empathy. I think selfishness is a characteristic of being narcissistic. I think it's sometimes people use that as a definition of narcissism. So I think that it would be sort of an opposite of empathy. So people who are more empathetic aren't as selfish. And as for cultural differences, there is not much work on this. And in fact, our lab is now coming up with some work. We're going to be presenting it at the upcoming Association for Psychological Science in D.C. And it's all in progress right now. But we have 59 different countries, and we're comparing the countries to see which countries are highest and lowest and why. So that's right now, I can't off the top of my head remember.
Nothing that you can talk about quite yet.
Well, at the top of my head, if I had the data information here with me, I'd be able to talk about it, but I didn't prepare, unfortunately. But it is something that we will be exploring soon. So it's a great question. And as for the rise in conservatism, that's intriguing. But actually, I think that empathy is something that almost anyone can agree on. People of a different political background seem to value it, whether it's maybe for different reasons. In that nationally representative sample from the General Social Survey, I did look to see if empathy was related to having a particular political affiliation or belief, and it's actually not. So I thought maybe it was possible that one or the other group would value empathy more, but it turns out that's not the case.
All right. On to some other callers. Clay City, Illinois. This is our line 4. Hello.
Yes, my question is, what are the social ramifications of a lack of empathy? Is the murder rate affected by that? Is social behavior? I seem to notice that a lot of younger people, when you're talking to them, they have no qualms about opening up a cell phone and getting self-involved in things that are more interesting to them than they are to just being polite and that sort of thing. Has any study been taking this a little further to see what's happening in society because of a lack of empathy? I mean, are we seeing a changing demographic in the way people act and react to situations? I mean, if you have no empathy, you can shoot somebody and it won't, you know, you just go over and eat a sandwich and it doesn't bother you at all. I'm just wondering how this is all playing out have they studied any further to see what the long-term reaction has been? That's the end of my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a really good question. And as for, of course, the first thing we thought of was, well, how is empathy declining? But at the same time, so are murder rates and other violent crimes over time within the United States. So that's interesting. I'm not sure that it necessarily has the implication for violent crime, because maybe many other things are also affecting whether violent crimes change, like the number of police or the severity of punishments. But there have been specific types of crime that actually have increased, like hate crimes and also hit and runs and things like that. So there's been a small increase in crimes that are especially against most vulnerable groups. And I think that's interesting given the changes. In terms of everyday politeness, I think you're right that there has been a sense that we're not as polite as we used to be. There's more finger giving while driving kind of thing. I think it does affect our general goodwill towards others, because I think, especially even knowing that empathy is declining, I hope doesn't have the effect of people going, well, no one's empathetic, so why should I be? I would hope that we all still try. I've been thinking about like larger potential implications, like the fact that we are now in an aging population, and, well, you know, parents care for the young, but also there's a sandwich generation that cares for the old. And I'm concerned that as college students grow up, they may be less likely to care for the older adults. And I think that could be a huge societal problem if it continues. So I think there are some implications, but the research, it's too early to know what they are. And it also depends on whether or not empathy actually continues to decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going along here. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of the program. This is Focus, and our guest is Sarah Conrath. She is a social psychologist. She's a member of the faculty of psychology, University of Michigan, and has done a lot of work on this issue, that is empathy. What's happening with empathy? Are we more or less empathetic than we have in the past? And what's happening with the sort of companion or opposite, that is narcissism? You know, our ability to connect with and understand other people's emotional experience, how does that balance with the amount of time that we just spend thinking about ourselves? So that's what we're talking about here. We have some other callers. We'll keep going, and I believe we'll talk next with someone in Champaign, and that's line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Back to the media. I believe that in communications it's been studied the desensitizing nature of the media. You know, in terms of a comment from you. And actually, the other one, more on the humor side, is that if this did disprove your dissertation, would they take your PhD back?
Oh, funny. Yeah. No, I don't think they take it back, but maybe they should, right? So as for the desensitizing comment, yes, there is a hypothesis that exposure to, you know, violence in the media can lead to a desensitization. So, mm-hmm. And if you think about the word desensitization, it has the word sense in it. Empathy is about feeling a sense of, you know, sort of a ability to feel. And taking away that ability, if you think constant exposure to the media, if we had a high empathy and we were constantly exposed to violent media, it would actually be pretty painful. So we would have to desensitize, I think, as a potential response. And there's research showing that people who are exposed to these violent media actually end up becoming more aggressive. Not everybody, but on average.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think we need to go back and start checking people's PhD research. Anything that didn't pan out, we're just going to revoke.
Well, then
PhD.
I guess there will be no PhDs in the world.
Oh, okay. I guess maybe we can't do that. And I have another caller here. By the way, I think I passed somebody over. My apologies. We had a caller here. I think I got goofed up on my order. So if that person would like to call back, we'll do our best to get him in. In the meantime, we will talk with someone in Mahomet and line two. Hello.
Yes. Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm kind of. This wasn't my reason for calling and asking or commenting, but in terms of lots of things being blamed on the media, I really don't know at what point we forgot to turn off the on button, and also make the decision not to put our kids in front of something inappropriate. But my main reason for calling and asking was, I graduated in 1979 and. I was born in 1957, and so my parents were children during the Depression and grew up with nothing but didn't really know it. But when they raised us, they gave us everything, and we didn't really have to work for it. And I suspect, and maybe I did this too with my own children, raised a generation that really hasn't had to work hard for what they have either. Or don't understand doing without or being without. And I wonder if, does that have something to do with empathy or lack thereof?
That's a really interesting question. I actually don't know whether teaching kids the value of hard work and, I mean, I think that's sort of a value of respect, really, respect for what it takes to put food on the table. I'm not sure if that does influence empathy, but I think probably there would be some relationship. You know, you say you graduated in 1979, and that decade, the 70s, was also seen as by some as a narcissistic decade. Christopher Lash wrote a book called The Culture of Narcissism in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the phrase the me generation was pretty popular back then.
Right. Well, and or we really didn't care about major issues, although ironically we were also children watching Vietnam on the TV.
Right.
Probably the difference between that and Iraq was that we actually saw the bombing and such, and this last go around was so, I don't know, it was an edited war where we didn't get to see the really horrors of war, you know, on film.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did with Vietnam. But well, now I'm kind of wondering, you know, with the current economic decline and people, you know, so many people being affected by it, might that affect, you know, will empathy, you know, be on the rise, maybe?
That's a possibility, and we'll see. Depends on how long this goes on for, and it is possible that it is, that this sort of excessive affluence and this idea that we need to have all the latest products all the time,
mm-hmm.
is what's driving our lower empathy. And that maybe if we start focusing more on our relationships and not necessarily our money, that things will change. So we'll see.
Right. And we did. We have kind of isolated ourselves. Well, you know, more so than nobody's sitting on the front porch anymore.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
The neighbors, you know, children playing in the front yard or any of that kind of stuff where you, you know, sort of smile and nod to yourself that life is good kind of a thing and you care about others. We're so isolated now, I think, has a lot to do with some of these issues.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of changes in our community participation, and there's a good book that you might like called Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam.
What was the first word again?
Bowling, like bowling alley.
Uh-huh.
Bowling alone. And I know it seems funny to think about somebody standing there bowling alone, but that's his argument.
Oh, I'll look that up.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Thank you for
that. All right, well, thank you. Let's go on here to a cell phone, Champaign County, line 3. Hello.
Hello again. I'm back. So I was listening to the program. I was wondering, with this general slide, was anything in your meta-analysis show any kind of bump back up after 9/11?
No, actually. We find the biggest declines after 9/11, I mean, after 2000. So we're not finding any blips back up.
Were you surprised that something like, the 9/11 bombings and, the planes, that didn't cause some kind of rise in empathy throughout the country? Because it seemed like everybody was talking about it, but...
Yeah, and it also
didn't show up in the research.
Yeah, I actually, now that you say that, it is surprising, because there was also a sense of, I think, greater connection for a while after 9/11. Americans felt, I think, a sense of cohesion, and unfortunately it was at the expense maybe of people who weren't Americans, but it was still this greater sense of closeness. And we're not seeing it in our data, so I'm not sure if it's because college students weren't as interested in it or what, but it's that's a really good point.
Okay, well, thanks again.
All right, back over to another caller here, someone in Philo, line 1. Hello.
You know how giving to charity correlates with empathy? I'll hang up and listen.
Another great question. So this is, again, about the idea of, should we measure empathy based on somebody's self-report?
Oh, uh-huh.
Yes, empathy, people who say they're empathetic give more donations to charities. They volunteer more often and longer and more regularly. They are generally just more courteous in terms of nice little things they do, like opening doors and carrying groceries for others, watching their pets, taking care of their plants, things like that. So yes, generally, if there's some sort of what we call pro-social behavior, chances are empathy is related to it.
And that's, I think, that those kind of questions are part of the survey that we talked about earlier. That is, you ask people, do you regularly hold doors for somebody else? Do you do volunteer work in your community? Do you contribute to charitable causes? You're asking people, do you do all those things? And that goes in part of your measure of their empathy score.
No, actually, that's the behavior associated with empathy. So empathy is them saying whether they tend to, specifically whether they tend to feel emotions when other people feel emotions,
oh, okay.
Or whether they imagine other people's points of view.
Okay.
So it's very abstract, but that abstract idea, which we call a personality trait, actually does relate to behaviors.
Oh, okay. So I guess I somehow had the idea that those kinds of things, you ask people, do you do those things? And but that's not part of your trying to score somebody on there.
Yeah, no. But but those are questions that are asked in nationally representative surveys, and we do find that people who are empathetic are more likely to say yes to those questions. But also there's actual behaviors too. So it's not just them just saying I'm great, because that wouldn't really be empathy.
Yeah. We have a couple of minutes left here. Something I want to get back to, and this is an entire, we have another, could do another hour, I'm sure. And I know that there are a lot of scholars, researchers of various kinds, who media people, psychologists, they're looking at social media. They're looking at the fact that people have the potential to be connected with, as I said at the beginning, family, friends, anybody, 24 hours a day, almost any point. And they're looking at that and what that means for how people relate to one another. And the interesting thing is that now that we're in a time when the potential to be, we have more potential than ever before to be connected,
mm-hmm.
But that you, while that's there, at the same time, you would see the decline in empathy.
Right.
You would think those two things shouldn't work that way.
You would think so, and I've called that the empathy paradox. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, that there's a rising sense of disconnection in sort of the emotional way. Mm-hmm. At the time when we're more connected than ever in terms of our technology, it's a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm that's where we looked that maybe we looked at the hypothesis that maybe media is influencing our empathy, these new media, and maybe the connection should be in quotes. Maybe we're not really becoming more connected in a deep way, at least, and that the shallow connections are kind of eroding our, I guess, our social connections.
Yeah. Some people I know have looked at this and made some very interesting, raised some very interesting questions about, yes, the these technologies enable people to connect and to be in touch, but it also gives you a lot of control over the degree of the connection. And it goes, for example, to the thing, well, now everybody's got a cell phone, mm-hmm. but people aren't calling. They're texting.
And people also aren't answering.
And well, yeah. You know, it says, well, yes, maybe I want to be connected, but up to a point. And if it gets to the point where it's too much, then I can say, oh, sorry, busy, can't, you know.
Right.
Can't
do it. It's kind of like the difference between maybe like a cheap connection where it doesn't cost you much to maintain it. Maybe it's a penny per person in your network versus like an expensive connection, which is a costly one that is like every hours every day, a deep emotional connection. So those are two different ways of connecting to people, and they're still called connections. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. Maybe it's good as a psychologist, you say there's lots more questions than there are answers. It gives you more things to work on.
Yeah, I think I'll be busy on this for a while.
Yeah. Right. Well, there for right now, we'll leave it with our thanks to Sarah Conrath. She's professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. And she is here visiting the campus. Folks at the Institute of Communications Research brought her here. And she'll be giving a talk at noon today talking about these very things the empathy paradox, the increasing disconnection in an age of connection. And folks who are in and around Champaign-Urbana can stop by. That's noon at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.